This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Airbnb says Asheville is the number one city in the state for host revenues last year. Not surprising, since the city has become such a tourist destination. Then in January, the Asheville City Council voted to severely restrict short-term rentals like Airbnb. I'm here with two reporters from the Asheville Citizen-Times who have been following this story closely. Joel Burgess is city reporter for the paper. Welcome back, Joel.
Good to be here.
Also with us is Dylan Davis, growth and economy reporter for the same publication. Hello, Dylan.
Hey, how you doing?
So if you're growth and economy reporter for the Asheville, for the city of Asheville, you're a busy guy.
Oh, yeah. There's never a shortage of stories in the region.
Well, let me ask you the question about the city council and this vote in January. What happened?
That was the last shoe to drop in terms of restricting Airbnbs, or as the city council now calls them, short-term vacation rentals. Mm-hmm. They banned all new short-term vacation rentals downtown. And downtown, of course, is a huge, huge mm-hmm. tourist destination. So it was a big deal. It has become a big part of the economy, and it had the potential to become even bigger.
So let's talk about this and what generated – obviously there's pushback. There's some fear of the impact of these. What's the conversation around Airbnb?
I think there's a concern about kind of the effect on tourism in the region. I mean, tourism is such a massive industry in Asheville. It generates so much money, and you know, it pays into itself with the hotel tax that ends up going into tourism promotion. You know, so it's one of those where it's a very significant issue.
Yeah. So why wouldn't you want to encourage it? I mean, to some extent, it brings more people in. The fewer barriers you have to people, I mean, this is one economic argument. Mm-hmm. The fewer barriers you have to people coming in, if tourism is your business, bring them in any which way. But apparently, there are other concerns around that.
Yeah, I think I was chatting with Stephanie Pace Brown. She's with Explore Asheville last year for a story on tourism, and she was talking about people who say, "Oh, there's a lot of traffic headed to my favorite mm-hmm. restaurant. I can't park in front of my favorite restaurant." And her argument was, would that restaurant be there if mm-hmm. not for the tourists? And I think, with Airbnb, there's kind of a mix of balancing development interests and community interests and keeping Asheville with the kind of the personality that it has mm-hmm. and not shifting to be too on development.
Yeah, and for one thing, Joel, they're not paying the same taxes hotels are, right? So that's one of the concerns, or do they?
Well, it depends. That was a really interesting move back in 2015. Airbnb, in an attempt to legitimize itself to the local government, said, hey, we'll pay the hotel tax. Of course, Airbnb isn't the only way that people mm-hmm. can do short-term rentals. You can do these short-term vacation rentals all sorts of ways. And I'll jump in and say, I think Dylan's exactly right. I mean, there is that really interesting sort of pushback from some locals who just – it's really a pushback against some tourism in general. Mm-hmm. And then the other real pushback you've seen is from people who are advocates for affordable housing or housing in general. Mm-hmm. And they say that this really – exacerbates what's already a bad housing situation.
Because we thought of this as the idea is this is sort of part of the gig economy. People can now much more efficiently use space and time and all of mm-hmm. that. Ma and Pa will rent out their space when they're empty nesters. But the fact is it's become a business, and it's not just Ma and Pa operations, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think and then there's a concern about pushing people out of the area. You know, I think there's obviously concerns of gentrification and the way that the downtown develops, it's starting to price people out. I mean, I came to Asheville back in August, and there were so many concerns about finding an affordable place, finding childcare that was affordable, and there's just so many questions. So
are people? Is this becoming a business? Are people buying property for that purpose?
So well, I thought about this because I looked back in our archives and I saw that we actually first wrote about short-term rentals in 1998, and really mm-hmm. it was this little kind of quirky thing like you're describing, mm-hmm. Where somebody was saying, "Hey," and really Asheville wasn't as much of a tourist destination then. It was, but it wasn't anywhere close to the universe that it's in now. And, you fast forward 20 years and it's $20 million is what they're bringing in. This is what you were talking about at the start of the segment. Just Airbnb, again, that's just one platform for it. So, yes, it is big business. In 2016, I was trying to get a handle on really who owned these things and how big of a business was it? Because the argument that you're hearing is people that want less restrictions on it oftentimes are saying, look, these are locals and they own property and this place is beautiful, but it doesn't have a lot of high paying jobs. This is a way for us to cash in on the tourist economy. But then some of the folks on the other side of the argument were saying, you actually have businesses that are coming in, as you're right. saying, that are buying these homes. And in 2016, the best numbers I felt like I could get is I looked at a city list, an enforcement list, and about half of the people on that enforcement list, people or entities, owned other properties. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of tells you there's some wealth there. And a lot of them were corporations and some were out of town and that sort of thing. But also about a third on that list were people that only owned one property. Mm-hmm. So it was a real mix.
So this is income for them.
That's right. So there were some people that really this was an important part of their daily income, maybe how they paid their mortgage, you know. But then there are, yes, for other people to become really big business.
But aren't there zoning restrictions already in place? I mean, can't you, if you're in a residential area, can you really just rent out your property? How does that go?
You're exactly right. Residential, you can rent it out long term, but you can't rent it out short term. That's what we're talking about. It's a month is the cutoff point. And for a long time, there had been restrictions on short term vacation rentals in residential areas. But the funny thing is back, for example, in 1998 or the early 2000s, it was complaint driven. So, you know, you had to make your neighbors angry or something. But then the flip happened around 2015. And I think that was Asheville's increasing role in the tourism world, just so many people coming here, the advent of Airbnb and the fact that it was really easy to do online. That's when you started to see this pushback. Mm. And it became a political issue. And the city council, you know, raised the fines and said it's going to be $500 a day. It was $200 a day if you do this, and we're going to actively enforce it. It's not just your neighbors complaining.
Well, and when you raise the fine, you can actually hire the enforcers. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, you can build the infrastructure so it's possible to do. But Dylan, in terms of where the money in Asheville is, where are they? And this is, for instance, developers. They want to see more of this, the tourist industry. Again, it's a push-pull kind of a thing. If you oversaturate the market, it could be a bad thing. Where, in terms of the money, let's start with developers. How do they feel about this argument?
I think developers are very anti having too many restrictions on what they're able to do. I mean, when you have a sizable investment into the community and buying land in Asheville or Buncombe County, like you would have to get in, I mean, you want to be able to do the project the way you want. And, you know, that's high volume housing projects. That's, you know, short-term rentals. That's, you know, things that are going to make your investment back and you can sell it away in a few years and it's just as well. So,
well, let's move this conversation a little bit. I want to shift right now and step back and look at how Airbnb and other short-term rentals have affected communities across the country. Mai Nguyen is an associate professor in the Department of City and Regional Planning at UNC Chapel Hill, and she's looked into this. Welcome back, Mai.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Good to have you here. How has Airbnb changed housing policy? I mean, if we look at this question nationally, are other places having the same debate that they're having here in Asheville?
Oh, absolutely. I think that this industry has moved so quickly and has grown exponentially that local jurisdictions, elected officials, haven't wrapped their brain around how to actually deal with this, the consequences of Airbnb or short-term rentals, really, the proliferation of short-term rentals in cities. For example, in San Francisco and New York City, for example, they're trying to wrap their brain around it and get Airbnb to share data with them so they can actually see how many units are in their city. I mean, the problem is we just haven't had a good sense of where they are, how many are there, and what the impacts are.
Well, but generally, I mean, if we're concerned about it at all, we have some sense that there is an impact. What are the things that people generally worry about?
Well, before 2015, for example, Airbnb wasn't paying occupancy and sales taxes in North Carolina. They weren't collecting them. They weren't remitting them. So that was a concern that local jurisdictions weren't actually benefiting from all of this growth. There's unfair competition between hotels and bed and breakfasts that do pay these sales and occupancy taxes and also are heavily regulated. There's also concern of taking valuable units off of the housing stock, thereby exacerbating affordable housing problems. And also that Airbnb units are not subject to the same health, safety, and building code standards as other types of lodging, and they're really not monitored and regulated. I mean, if there was an Airbnb in the Trump Tower, for example, they may not have had overhead sprinklers. So, you know, there just isn't that monitoring and regulating.
But there does that does seem – I'll put this question to you, Mai, just generally. It does seem to me that once you start using your property for income, there are rules that govern that kind of property, right? Why can't – it would seem to me that a jurisdiction, if it hasn't already, could very easily define that property as one that is income generating and therefore subject to rules of safety and others, right?
No? Yeah, they could. It's the issue of actually sending out inspectors to inspect them. Mm. So it's the enforcement of it that is costly because they're diffused. Airbnbs are not in one location. They're not in one hotel, right? And so it's much harder to regulate.
Joel?
Well, I was just going to say that Mai really hit on she was causing me to have PTSD almost because I'm remembering this dance that the city council has done. And when she talked about local governments trying to wrap their brains around this, that's exactly what's been happening. And it's caused political convulsions. And because it's not just a matter of, city staff, planning experts saying, these are the effects and this is how we deal with them. It's become a political issue. So you have people pushing elected officials saying, we don't want regulation because this is how we make money and you're hurting us. And other people saying, look, these things are destroying neighborhoods. They're turning neighborhoods into de facto hotel districts. And so it's affected elections. I've seen people lose elections in part because of their stances on Airbnbs. And they're trying to find – it seems like they're trying to find this sweet spot. And some of the compromises that have come out of it, for example, is Asheville has made it easier to do something called a homestay. And the idea there is – and it's something you could also find on Airbnb – is that – a long-term resident must be present in the house and can rent out a few rooms, but you literally are sharing things, like a like a kitchen, like a bathroom. And then the latest battleground is these little detached cottages, mother-in-law cottages, garage apartments. Should they loosen up rules for those? And so that's exactly what I'm thinking of when Mai's describing this.
Yeah. I thought it was fascinating hearing her talk about the consequences. I think that so many cities and municipalities are trying to debate what are the consequences, and I think Asheville really took that into concern with that vote. And I think we'll see how that plays out.
Well, I want to ask Mai a little bit more about the consequences of housing and gentrification and what effect that has. Because again, if you have investors looking at this, and it's not just mom in a residential area saying I got an extra room. It does seem to me that would have an enormous effect on property values, which speaks to gentrification and affordable housing for people on the low end of the spectrum, economic spectrum. Mai?
Yeah, I'll say that I think the impacts of Airbnb and taking units off of the market combined with a national trend in undersupply of housing, they both are having consequences on gentrification. So I don't think it's just Airbnb. And I think Airbnb does operate or the concentration of them in hot housing markets do concentrate in areas that are undergoing rapid gentrification. So I think that there is definitely a correlation there. Just to get back to that point about who benefits and who pays, the New York City Attorney General's office actually sued Airbnb to get the data to do the analysis on who's actually running these Airbnb operations. And what they found was that many of the Airbnbs in New York City were commercially run, and they were essentially operating like illegal hotels, having 10 units in a building, for example. And that drove New York City to actually ban short-term rentals, anything that is rented under 30 days. And so once you start doing the analysis, you'll start seeing that there are a lot of costs to cities to actually have short-term rentals. And it's not clear that it's a big winner in terms of economics.
What are some of those costs?
The cost of police and safe, public outlays that we have to pay for. The cost to affordable housing. Prices go up and there's less affordable housing. I mean, there's a number of different costs.
Well, and it does seem to me, again, once you have the data, and the hard part, as you've all suggested, is there's very little data out there. At least it's not forthcoming. It may be available. It may have been generated, but it's not coming to public officials. But then the question is, it seems to be a pretty easy thing to say whether or not the owner lives there or not. That's an easy definition to make and then regulate it as such. And if you're not an owner operator, then that you're a corporation, et cetera. So you could regulate it that way. My first of all, does that make it easier? Because these lines do seem to be bright and clear, at least the distinction between an owner operator and a corporation or a corporate entity.
I think actually what makes it easier is if the owner is currently living in the house. I think for cities, that makes it much easier. Somebody's there on site, you know, they're dealing with complaints, safety issues. It's when it's an unoccupied owner that is renting the entire unit. And that's, but we don't know that. They're not registering these businesses so that we know whether or not there's an owner on site or not, or it's a commercial entity. And that's the problem. Actually, San Francisco has gotten Airbnb to register hosts. And I think that other cities should really push Airbnb to do the same thing in their cities.
What are there any other jurisdictions that have taken some action that could be exemplary?
In terms of registering hosts or?
Well, or anything in terms of just looking at this problem and taking action.
Well, there is a whole range of things that cities have done, between completely banning them to trying to locate them in just certain neighborhoods, to saying you can't rent your unit out for more than 3 weeks a year as a short-term rental. So there's a lot of variation, and places are trying different things. We really don't know what's effective and what the consequences are, because I think there are some unintended consequences of many of these policies and regulations.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Mai Nguyen is an associate professor at the Department of City and Regional Planning at UNC Chapel Hill. Joel Burgess, city reporter for the Asheville Citizen Times. And Dylan Davis, growth and economy reporter for the Asheville Citizen Times. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Great to be here.
Thanks, Frank.
You can find links to their work and their reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. Lee Wiltshire and Dick Cole helped out today. Special thanks to Blue Ridge Public Radio and Barbara Sayer, Matt Bush, and David Feingold for hosting us here in the city of Asheville. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.